Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention. With your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Our topic tonight is ADHD and the value of daily attention exercises. With us in our virtual studio is Dr. David Now. I got to tell you something. This is an exceptionally special show tonight. As you heard on the intro, we like to pay attention to attention, and that's exactly what we're doing tonight. We're doing it Epicenter Central. David Now is a very special individual in my heart because I saw him years ago, and I'm like, this guy's got something. I learned so much from him, and I think he's learned a lot by going back and forth, and we're going to get into the heart of some of that right now, maybe even uncover some ahas. Real quickly, before we get into the meat of the show, today is May the 10th, 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Write down, this is going to be a historic day in Attention Talk Radio, I can assure you. Some quick announcements. The CHAD conference is going to be coming up in November the 9th to the 11th. It's going to be in Atlanta, Georgia. If you have not gone to a CHAD conference, you need to go to a CHAD conference. You need to check out your tribe. You need to meet other people and meet everybody, almost everybody I've interviewed. Attention Talk Radio at one time or another has been a part of that organization. It's very, very, very important because they are the largest not-for-profit that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD exclusively. And tonight's show is actually being brought to them. So let's run a quick tip that they're going to share with you, and then we'll get into the meat of the show. So here we go.
Are you considering a medication holiday for your child? Possible benefits include time for a growth spurt unaffected by medication and relief from side effects. Be sure to weigh the benefits and the drawbacks because ADHD symptoms will return. And always discuss any changes with your child's health care provider first. For more information, visit the CHAD website, helpforadhd.org, H-E-L-P, the number 4, ADHD.org.
Thanks again, Chad, for supporting Attention Talk Radio. We cherish our relationship with Chad. And if you out there are in the ADHD community and you're not a member of Chad, you got to go check out the member benefits. There's some great stuff. But even past that, the magazine, the Ask the Expert, the National Resource Center. The bottom line is you need to be a part of that organization because they advocate on behalf of those with ADHD, and by being a member, you're helping the community speak with a unified voice. So that being said, let's get into tonight's show. Again, tonight we are paying attention to attention. Again, I've learned an enormous amount from David Now and my growth, and we've had some collaboration over the years. We don't do many interviews with him, but they're always on the top 10 list. David is a clinical neuropsychologist, ADHD specialist, and an international speaker, and a great speaker. He has a private practice since 1999. He provides both neuropsychological evaluations and independent medical examinations. He and his doctorates at the University of Alabama and completed his internship in neuropsychology at Tulane University Medical Center. He provides programs, workshops, retreats to help solve real life problems by those impacted with ADHD. And I want to make a total note. He doesn't talk about the theory. This is a big difference between Dr. Now. He takes it, he breaks it down in a practical way in ways that we can understand it. And there's few people that do what he does that actually do it with this, which is why I'm such a great fan of him. He writes a popular blog on topics of motivation, executive functioning, and psychology today. And he's a member of the Massachusetts Neuropsychological Association. You can learn more about Dr. Now at drnowell.com. And with that, Dr. Now, welcome to the show.
Jeff, good to be here. Thanks for the intro.
You there? We're having a hard time hearing you.
I'm here.
There we go.
Is this any better?
Welcome to the show.
Yep.
Yep, that's good.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Actually, hang on. You got some reverberation. Bear with me. Let me try something here real quick. You with us?
Yep, let me try to call you in from a better line. Can I do that?
Actually, that's good right now. I think I took care of it on the switchboard. So let's keep trying this and we'll go. So
we're here today.
Let me back up. When I say we pay attention to attention, everybody, Dr. David Now is incredible. I saw him do this exercise one time on memory. He walks into a presentation and he says, and I never get this right. He's like, I'm going to say, he says like sparrow, peppermint, wheelbarrow. And what's the other one? I always forget it.
That's amazing. Pathetic. The other one's pathetic.
Pathetic. I have to write that down because I always remember those three. And then he goes on about his lecture, and then he goes back and it's over with and says, who remembers those four words? And then he talks about, well, you know, some of you didn't really care, so it wasn't important. You weren't motivated. And he dices it down and he says, well, who remembers it? And people raise his hand. And it's really cool because how did you remember it? And I saw this one time. It was profound.
So,
Brett, you want to comment?
You know, Jeff, I just did that today with a workshop in Columbus. And, you know, what we're doing is we're trying to get people to think about how they run their own brain. Number one, how do you decide whether you're going to do an exercise like that when you're at a workshop? Number two,
yep.
If you do it, what is your motivation? And number three, how do you do it? Do you visualize these objects? If so, do you see the words or the things? And is it color? Is there movement? Or do you hear it? So we're really looking at metacognition, or as you say, attending to attention.
And that's exactly it. And to continue on this exercise that you do, I saw you do this exercise and you broke it down. Did you choose to do this and, you know, whatever? But what was interesting to me, I think it was an ACO conference, and this one woman said, well, I remember it. And you looked over at her and said, how did you remember it? And she said, I saw pictures of it. And you said, stop. Then you went to somebody else and you said, were they in color or black and white? And the woman said, color. Then you went back to the other woman and said, were they? She said, no, black and white. And it was profound,
right?
Because because I talk about only David Now can witness what he's paying attention to. And because of that, he can't witness what I'm paying attention to. So he's flying blind.
Yes.
So you really have nothing to compare it
yes.
to. And what is so cool about this is attention is this thing that you take for granted. And I've always been enamored with you. And I could only recently articulate it is because you put people in experience because the process is similar. And you teach people, you put them in an experience, you teach them to witness, the process is similar, and then they begin to witness it. And when you're in that exercise and people are starting to witness how they recall those differently, it's profound. And I don't do a very good job like you do on this, but I did a knockout one time. This one woman said she remembers things by smell. And it just blew me away.
Wow.
Because I've worked with people who have visual reminder system, some with
right.
auditory reminder system, but I've never seen anybody with a smell reminder system. And if a person remembers things by smell, or if that grabs their attention or they pay attention to smell, we would want a smelling reminder system as opposed to maybe an auditory system. And anyway, I just wanted to illustrate to everybody, this is the power of Dr. David. Now, we also did a show called Exactly How Did You Do That, which goes back to what you just said.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to me because I love coaching. I picked this up. He taught me everything I know. People come in and say, I want coaching on time management. And, you know, you go through this. Well, I'm always 10 minutes late. An hour late? No. On time? No. 10 minutes late. And then you go, well, what's your recipe? And it goes right back to what
yes.
you're talking about. You get people to actually see what's going on in their head and think through it. And it's been fast. I've had people where they're always 10 minutes late because they hate to be bored. I've had people that were 10 minutes late because they like the rush. I mean, at the end of it, sometimes they realize they don't have a time management system. It works perfectly based on that. And it's profound to me how many times we've changed that. And so that is the genius of Dr. David Now. And I've studied it for years. Now, tonight's show, we're making a shift to mindfulness exercises. And I've been on this quest trying to figure out, like, there's got to be a way to do this. And I think Dr. Now, it clicked for him the other day that mindfulness exercises, when you notice your mind drifts away from something and you bring it back, it's like a tennis player throwing the ball up, like just tossing it up for a serve, and then they serve it. And they do that over and over and over and over and over and over. And then they get into a match, and they do that because they want a really good serve. And to me, Dr. Now, we can do attention exercises for those with ADHD to help build the skill of self-regulation. So I've been building this up a little bit. I want you to talk about it. Talk about your thoughts on that in your discovery and just that's what brought this thing together. And just give us a little bit of background
yep.
and describe that to us.
So clicked for me just a couple of months ago at a workshop when an attendee described her experience with mindfulness practice. So mindfulness practice For the purposes of our conversation tonight, you set a timer for 2 minutes and you simply commit to observing your breath. When you get distracted, you bring your attention back to the breath. When you think, hey, this will make a good PowerPoint slide, you come back to the breath. When you worry about your mortgage, you come back to your breath. So the practice is simply coming back to the breath. Now, I've been recommending mindfulness for years. Lydia Zalowska's book, The Mindfulness Solution for Adult ADHD, I've recommended. But in my mind, I think I sort of grouped mindfulness practice with breathing exercises and progressive muscle relaxation. But it clicked for me that there's a difference. When this attendee was describing the process of bringing her attention back, she reached out with her right hand way up in the sky as though she were grabbing her distraction. And then she brought her right hand back to center, and then she did it again. And it occurred to me that bringing your attention back to the breath in a mindfulness practice is exactly like practicing a tennis serve. You know, your arms up in the air, and then it's down. Your arms up in the air, and then it's down. What clicked for me is that she was helping me understand how mindfulness practice taps into neuroplasticity. So the idea in neuroplasticity is that, let's say you take up throwing darts, and the first time you throw darts, you're not very good. You might miss the board.
Yep,
the
yep.
Second and third time, you've still missed the board. But eventually you start hitting the board, and then you get better and better. So when you practice something, anything, behaviorally, you get better at it. What's happening in the brain is that these two neurons that have never fired together before, so one controls balance, the other is a visual neuron, for the first time, they fire together. Because of long-term potentiation, it makes it easier for them to fire together the second time. Third and the fourth time. Now, you can't tell. It still feels hard. But eventually, you notice that you get better with the darts, and you're actually laying down a pathway. With enough practice, you actually change the brain. When people learn to read Braille, the part of the brain that controls that fingertip sensation actually gets bigger. And we know from Sarah Lazar's work at Harvard that long-term meditators have differences. For example, the anterior region of the insular cortex is thicker and denser in people who have a long history of meditation. The reason that's important is that the insular cortex supports interoceptive awareness. That's this awareness of what you and I were describing earlier. So how did I show up 10 minutes late? How did I almost punch my little sister, but I didn't? How did I almost order that second cocktail, but I didn't? So the way that I manage my body and my state, picture things in my head, that requires an interior awareness. The reason that's super important is that folks with ADHD can be largely driven by externals, novelty, variety, and it's super important to counterbalance that. So in that moment, when the workshop attendee was reaching her hand in the air and coming back to midline, it occurred to me that's what mindfulness practice is. For an ADHD coach, for clinicians working with folks who have ADD, for adults themselves living with ADD, the goal of mindfulness practice is not necessarily inner peace or calm. In fact, it should make us a little anxious to realize how distracted we are. There's huge financial interest out there in us never paying attention to our attention. So that's what clicked for me that day, Jeff, is like, that's what mindfulness practice is. It's very different from relaxation. The goal is not calmness. The goal is learning how to do this over and over and to build that muscle, that part of the brain.
Just like musicians practice scales, athletes practice stuff, students practice math problems. You do it over and over and over to bring that stuff together to make good with it. So I want to go to a break real quick. When we come back, I want to kind of build on this and kind of actually break down this into a couple different components, which I think is going to be fun. If you are not familiar with Dr. David Nowak, the guy's brilliant, and you need to go listen to him in the workshop. I've seen him bound around. It's phenomenal for everything I've described to you more. But go to his website, drnowell.com, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got Dr. David Now, and we're paying attention to attention. And before the break, Dr. Now was describing his experience about looking at mindfulness as actually an attention exercise. And we've been a little bit of a kick lately. Last week, we actually did an interview with Dr. Ari Tuckman on minding your manners, which was really just related to this, because we were talking about as a child grows up, as they try to mind their manners by waiting for everybody to sit down before they eat or holding the door, that's actually a self-regulation exercise because you're having to pause and inhibit your urge to actually go and do something. And it's fascinating to me because, Dr. Now, as we begin to look at mindfulness as an attention exercise, as you described, there's all kinds of things that have been that we've done in the past that we didn't realize actually helped with self-regulation. That are kind of falling by the wayside, that is just kind of fascinating to me to actually think of things like learning your manners as learning your manners, but actually a way to develop self-regulation skills. Thoughts?
I think that that's why it's important for children to learn to do homework independently by a specified time on the clock, not to wait until they feel like it, because you'll never feel like getting a root canal.
Yep.
And not to solely rely on a parent dragging them to the workstation, but to begin to do that independently. And if a child said, David, I actually looked into the research, and it turns out that homework isn't strongly related to academic outcome, I would say, yeah, I read the same research. Now go do your homework. I think that those of us who grew up attending religious services, whether or not you wanted to on a regular basis, it's good to learn how to do something you don't want to do, because as an adult, you may have to do things with your partner, or you may have to stand in line at the DMV, or your accountant may ask you to get some boring paperwork together for tax season. As children, we practiced these things. We had support from teachers and parents and coaches. Then hopefully we've laid down those pathways and we can do it as an adult. And heaven help the adult who hasn't learned to do something they don't want to do. So I agree that even something like playing red light, green light, if you remember, the kids who had trouble with that, you might ask, you know, where are they now? How are they doing? The kids who didn't develop impulse control on the playground, did they ever get a chance to develop it somewhere else? If not, heaven help them.
So just it's fascinating how much all the shows we've done kind of fits together on this. We've done a couple shows on boredom, which has been a fascination to me. And there's a high correlation between long-term boredom and high levels of depression. And long-term boredom is when you are if you stave off boredom in the short term and you're constantly stimulated, that actually leads to long-term boredom. I actually coached a guy one time who was on meth or something like that, and he actually said he got bored of taking it after a while. It didn't do anything for him after a while, and it was strange. I'm not so sure real, but it was fascinating to me that if you do something, you're stimulated all the time, you become immune to it a little bit, and there's correlations between that and long-term boredom, because in today's world, there's constant stimulation. And it's actually interesting because I've actually had some clients where I've actually said, let's go practice boredom. I want you to go to the park for 2 hours, get an Uber, where they're going to drop you off and don't take anything there. And what's fascinating me, Dr. Now, is people struggle with it, but a lot of my patients, the lot of people I work with, actually fall asleep like they can't sleep normally, but they actually do. But it's fascinating to me because I worked with some people to actually go practice being bored, to be able to manage and kind of self-regulate, just like it might be bringing your breath back to something. Or these are other mindfulness exercises that are just not meditation. I've actually had people before where I want you to sit down and close your eyes and listen to a piece of music, and I only want you to listen to the bass guitar. So you hear the piano and you hear the guitar, but when you notice you're listening to the piano, you want to bring your thoughts back to the bass guitar. It's the same exercise, because there's this thing that you want to focus on, and as your mind drifts away, you notice it and you bring it back. Again, the theory of tonight is you practice it like an athlete, you practice it like a musician, you practice the math problem so that at game time, you're able to catch yourself in the meeting or wherever you are and stop and wait, I got to bring my attention back to where I am to build your self-regulation skills, which is really kind of interesting to be able to look at these attention exercises as something that those with ADHD should practice on a regular basis.
Athletes and musicians will often experience a plateau. They'll have real growth and it'll be fun, and then they'll reach a plateau with the scales of their routine. And the way we interpret that plateau may depend upon whether we have a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. In her research, Carol Dweck describes one way of thinking about skills and intelligence is that you're born with a certain amount of intelligence and a certain amount of social skill and a certain amount of ability to do the tango. But the growth mindset looks at these skills and says, I could learn more and more and more about the Kardashians. Every Kardashian has a Wikipedia page, and if I wanted to, I could dedicate myself to getting better and better. I could literally change my brain by focusing on the Kardashians. Or I could read Russian novels, or I could study a language, or I could take up handball or pickleball, or I could take up an instrument. And the thing about the growth mindset is everything we do changes our brain, and there is no skill which you can't develop. That doesn't mean that you have to develop all these skills. It means you get to choose. But when we experience a plateau, whether it's with an athletic or with mindfulness practice, that plateau either means you've gotten as good as you're going to get, that's a fixed mindset, or it means if I keep persisting, I will get a breakthrough to the next level. Yep. And the next level of mindfulness means I'll be in better control of my mouth, I'll be in better control of my tempo control, my time regulation, I'll be in better control of regulating boredom. There's real payoff if we commit to working through those plateaus.
It's kind of fascinating. I want to go to a break real quick, but I'm just going to tie this together because so many of our interviews all come together. We actually did a show that all roads lead to mindfulness, but we did an interview with Dr. John Rady a couple of years ago on the impact of ADHD and exercise. And he talked about what's really good, because exercising movement back in hundreds of years ago, you had to go find food and you had to move to go get it. And you had to think through, which is an executive functioning exercise. And he talked about how exercise is really good for staving off depression and Alzheimer's and stuff like that. And he talked about martial arts is exercise, and it's a mindfulness exercise for you to begin to think your way through the moves and stuff, because it's a sequencing thing. While you're not maybe focused in on the breath, you're focused in on the sequence of things that have to be done in movement, which again is training your brain and neurons that fire together, wire together, whatever that thing is. And again, it doesn't sound like an attention exercise, but now you can begin to see why this all makes a lot of sense. So I want to go to break again. When we come back, there's another level of attention exercises that I want to expose that Lydia and I were actually having an interview back in March, and this kind of unearthed. I had never talked to her before. We did an interview with Dr. Now, and it was kind of this thing kind of popped out of the side. So we'll come back to that when we go to break. Everybody, go to DR Now, NOWELL. Check out Dr. Now, and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. David now, and I'm having the time of my life because we're paying attention to attention. We're getting some ahas, and all of a sudden, all these shows that we've done over the years are all kind of falling into place into this one little kind of simple formula. So at the beginning of the show, I really wanted to highlight the brilliance of Dr. David. Now, I learned so much about it because he's really good about putting people in experiences so they witness the process of attention, and he began to recognize it. And we talked about his memory exercise at the beginning. Then we started talking about attention exercises as a means to be able to catch yourself and shift attention or really kind of self-regulate. And I really liked how he dovetailed in is that you do that over a long period of time and your brain actually rewires itself. It physically changes. The fancy word is neuroplasticity. What's interesting to me, Dr. Now, is I was interviewing a guy years ago about Japanese psychology, and I've had a lot of people talk to me about how the brain is negatively wired. It is. It didn't settle with me. But this individual said, you know, in Japanese psychology, the thing is about when you have a problem, you have to deal with it right now. So imagine that you're on your way home and you get a flat tire. You've got to deal with it right now. Something that goes right, you don't have to deal with it right now. You can put off a celebration. And as they described, that problems crowd out celebrations. And as I understand it, and I haven't studied this, and I really don't even want to at this point in time because I like the story, is in Japanese psychology, you actually have to practice gratitude. You actually have to sit down and schedule time, and you practice looking for things that you're grateful for. And people say grateful, but, you know, Dr. Now is great because we've done a couple shows on what dopamine feels like, and he says it's like biting into a peach and feeling that booyah and being grateful for it. I mean, that's when you're grateful, you got to be very specific for what you're doing. And the thing about that was fascinating to me is I knew that, but in talking to Lydia, it's actually an exercise. The attention exercise we've been talking about, shifting your attention. Gratitude is about shifting your attitude. And I know that I didn't even know I was doing it at the time, but a lot of times I've had people with ADHD, I want you to write down a journal of everything you do right in a day, which is funny because they can't think of anything, but I'm like, all right. I put the toothpaste away and I brush my shoe on right. And it's kind of interesting because they struggle with it at first. They do it. It actually is an exercise that they begin to see all the things that they did right. And I've actually had people before come in like, you know, on time management. Well, let's – one guy said he mapped it out the week before. He had 30 appointments. He made 27 on time. One of them was beyond his control and two of them was late. And he was focusing on the two that he didn't get as opposed to the 27 who was on time, which goes back to – what I was talking about earlier, Dr. Now, is, well, how exactly did you make the 27 on time? Because that's your recipe. But the point really is I want to get your thoughts where you do gratitude and success diaries as an attention exercise to change your attitude. How does that grab you?
You know, for 90% of human history, we lived as hunter-gatherers. We lived in groups of 30 or 40 people. So everything that's cool about the brain and everything that's faulty about the human brain seems to relate to the fact that until about 4, 5, 6,000 years ago, we lived as hunter-gatherers. And so it really made sense for our ancestors to quickly scan the environment and find the problems. Like, is that a threat? Is that a threat? And we still have that kind of brain. In research, if you show subjects a page full of smiley faces with one frowny face, they'll find the frowny face quicker. Opposite is true. If you have a page of frowny faces with one smiley face, we're slower to find the smiley face. And again, this is not a problem. This is not a bug. This is a feature. Our brain is wired to find problems. But when you practice gratitude, you're briefly taking action to work against that grain. You're saying, in this moment, I'm not being physically threatened, and I'm going to turn my attention to that for which I'm grateful. So it is a change in attitude, but it's also a change in attention, because your brain is a question-answering machine. If I say, what will probably go wrong tomorrow? My brain will answer that question. If I say, why am I such a screw-up? My brain will answer the question, stuff from childhood, decisions I've made. But if I ask myself, what is my biggest unearned advantage? Like, I'm a little bit taller than other people, and that's an advantage. Or you're a little bit better looking, or you had excellent parenting, or, you know, you've got a trust fund, or you're super bright, or you have great social skills. What is your unearned advantage? Well, then your brain works to answer that problem. You know, my unearned advantage is that I have great resilience and I don't panic. Or my unearned advantage is that I can talk my way out of anything. When we give our brain a problem to solve, it solves the problem. And to me, a gratitude exercise is giving the problem-solving brain something to do. It's my number one recommendation for people who have trouble falling asleep. At bedtime, come up with three specific things for which you're grateful and slowly work those one by one, asking about that makes me grateful. Where do I feel that gratitude in my body? And what does that gratitude feel like in my body? And many times before people can get to the second one, they've drifted off to sleep. If you just lay in bed and see what happens, your brain will scan the day and see what went wrong. It'll look for problems. It'll keep you awake. When you give it a gratitude practice, then that's the problem it will solve. Oh, okay. What am I grateful for today?
Yep,
it moves to solve the problem.
So if you just go out there and just start swinging a golf club, you're going to hack it up kind of all over the place, as opposed to somebody sitting there and saying, this is what I want you to think about, and this is what I want to pay attention to. And you do it over and over and over and over, and you develop a golf swing. In the context that we're talking, when it comes to mindfulness or attitude, these types of things, as you sit there and say, hey, attention exercises, hey, this is what I should focus on. And if I do it over and over again, my brain physically starts to change. I develop the skill of self-regulation, and all of a sudden we're performing better in the game just because of the practice, which is kind of interesting. Because practice is hard for those with ADHD. What do you think of that, Dr. Nell?
Yes. Well, I think it's hard, and mindfulness practice can be dull. The practice that I recommend is to set a timer for 2 minutes and simply agree that for 2 minutes, you're going to come back to the breath. Now, it takes about 30 seconds to actually settle into the practice, so it's only about a minute and a half of meditation. If you and I were comparing workouts, and I said, hey, Jeff, I did 15 push-ups, and you said, well, David, I did 30, we would agree that you had a better workout. Likewise, if you and I set a timer for 2 minutes and just noticed how often we got distracted, and each time we got distracted, we brought our attention back to the breath. After that 2 minutes is up, you might say, hey, David, I got distracted 15 times. And I would say, Jeff, I win because I got distracted 30 times. That means I got to practice bringing my attention back to the breath 30 times. So being bad at meditation is good for self-regulation because, you know, if you're the Buddha and you can focus for an hour with no effort, it wasn't really a workout. But if you're you and me, this will be a workout. And 2 minutes is something you can commit to. Now, you mentioned going out with a golf club and hacking at it. You probably could get better and better. At some point, you might hire a coach. The same thing is true for mindfulness practice. You can do a lot of this on your own or with a YouTube video or using the exercise I just recommended with a 2-minute timer. But at some point, you might actually consult with someone who uses mindfulness practice clinically. You might attend a retreat that's geared for adults with ADD, or you might work with an ADD coach who has some familiarity in the way you and I are describing mindfulness. We're really not talking about mindfulness for inner peace or for relaxation. We're talking about it as an attentional practice.
Absolutely. Build the skill of self-regulation. So here's the charge with you, Dr. Now, is I loved everything that you say. I, being an athlete by background, I've learned over the years that exercise is a repetitive and boring routine task. I mean, I swam around a black line for 4 hours a day for like 11 years. Talk about boring. Might as well. I mean, you get dizzy doing that. But you know what's interesting is I did it all the time. But I always struggled with it when there wasn't a lot of people there. And now I rarely do it by myself. I mean, maybe once or twice a year I can grunt my way through it. But I don't have a problem because I have a couple workout buddies that I just call up and we go do that. And the thing about it is I'm I'm trying to figure out how we do like the Zumba class for attention exercise where everybody comes together and it's a social event that makes it easier, because at the end of the day, there's been an explosion of clubs and personal trainers. And my philosophy is that it's a boring task, but if it's social and there's other things that go, it's enough to, you're going there for something, and then exercise happens as a secondary activity. And I think that's the issue with mindfulness. We all agree that it's helpful for those with ADHD, but the problem is it's boring on your own. And we got to figure out a way to do it in groups and stuff like that, so it's a party, so you're getting together for your local Zumba class. And we got to come up with some variety where you might focus on your breath or focus on the mood, the bass guitar, if you will, and some music. Because there's lots of ways you can do this if you begin to open your mind. But the cool part about today and having you on, Dr. Now, is that realization is that mindfulness in the context of ADHD is an exercise, and it's a skill that you build, and we need to practice it to actually build that. And if you do that, you can actually perform better in a game. And while it's not something that a lot of people think about, I got to tell you, over the years, 75% of all conversations ultimately ended up back at mindfulness one way or another. So to me, it's the root of it all. And if we just begin to practice it, it changes the game. So any other comments before we close things down?
Joe, I'm going to follow up on what you described as like coming up with a Zumba for maybe somebody out there listening to this has a combination of they're knowledgeable about mindfulness practice and they're an entrepreneur, and they can work with you to develop the soul cycle of attention practices.
I like that.
So give Jeff a call if you're that person.
It's attention at attentiontalkradio.com. You send to me, I'll call him David now. We'll figure this stuff out, because it hasn't been done, and I think it could revolutionize everything. It's amazing to me, Dr. Now, 20 years ago, there was like Gold's Gym. Now there are a dime a dozen. There's like Lifestyle, and there's like Crush around here, and Orange Theory. And it's all group classes where everybody's coming together to do that stuff and then make it fun. So with that, I hope everybody learned something about today. I hope this has been a little novel and different. But you know, if you've listened to this show, you know me. I love to pay attention to attention, and this was the sweet spot. So with that, Dr. Now, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Good talking to you, always.
Everybody, check out Dr. Now by going to drnowell.com. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.